Hiya, and welcome to the Beauty Podcast with Sally Hughes, the straight-talking, no-nonsense podcast written and presented by me, Sally Hughes, and brought to you by Avon. We'll be discussing a different topic each week on all manner of beauty issues, from the practical to the political, the deeply serious to the deliciously superficial, all with a host of industry experts at the very top of their game. In every show, there will be a Q&A with them and me, and we really want to hear from you. Ask us any beauty-related question or tell us which topics you'd like to cover. Tag me on social, I'm Sally Hughes everywhere, that's with one L and an I, and use the hashtag TheBeautyPodcastWithSally. Now, one of the reasons I love beauty, beyond the day-to-day pleasure of it, is the power of hair, skincare and makeup to bring about transformation. A big haircut can change how I walk, talk, dress, feel. A slash of bold lipstick can instantly alter both my face and a crappy day. I can do a Ronnie Spector eye one day, a Marilyn mouth the next, and my mood and persona can change as fast as my face. My special guest today has utilised the power of beauty in the most dramatic physical transformation of all. Juno Dawson is a best-selling author, broadcaster, screenwriter, and renowned spokesperson on transgender issues and rights. She also happens to be my dear friend and a die-hard beauty addict. It's amazing how frequently those two things go together.
I know.
Hello, Juno. Thanks
Hi.
For coming on. I'm so chuffed to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Just you and me in the studio.
It's lovely. Got my tea, got my water. I'm ready.
Can we start at the beginning, perhaps before your physical kind of anatomical journey? When did you first become intrigued by beauty? Like, was there a moment you felt something stir?
I mean, I suspect probably a lot of people have said this exact sentence, but it was watching my mum get ready on a Friday night, the smell of Elnett, Tundra poison. I don't know, is that still in?
It is. It's a great perfume.
Never poison. She thought that was too much.
Uh-huh.
But Tundra poison. She used to do her own nails and just have like one of those little dryer things that you just poke your hand in. And it was like a little hair dryer for your fingers.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, she would get ready. I remember Some Mothers Do Have Them used to be on BBC Two repeats. I'm not that old.
Yeah, so that's like an early evening,
yeah,
about to embark on a night, isn't it? Mm. I love that.
And I imagine you could have had any trans woman in and they would have said that because no one was explicitly teaching us about beauty as children, you were absorbing it like a sponge.
Yeah.
So I would sit, you know, with one eye on Doctor Who and one eye on my mum getting ready and just be fascinated by the whole thing. I think me and my mum have very different taste, but it was more about the process of it.
The kind of ritual of it.
Yeah.
I love how succinctly that sums you up as well. One eye on my mum putting on my makeup, the other eye on Doctor Who. This is literally who you
very
are now.
Me. Yeah, that is just my whole history, yeah.
Can you remember a point where you felt maybe excluded from it? You felt that it was for other people and you weren't allowed to join the party?
I think possibly it would have been around the time that my sister was allowed to start on the makeup.
Big sister, little sister?
She's a little sister. And so it was only really then that there was a sense of me being denied things. But, you know, my childhood was littered with me being boycotted from doing things I wanted to do, like tantrums in Toys R Us. You're not allowed a Girls' World styling head. You're not allowed a She-Ra figure. All of that stuff really defined my childhood. But then when my sister, who actually wasn't massively into beauty, it has to be said, when she did start getting like Ms. Magazine with the little samples of little eye
mounts,
compacts and things,
yeah,
like that, you know, that was when I started to feel a bit, But the thing is, all the way through my childhood and adolescence, there was the life that I was living and there was the imagination world in which I was always Juno. So when my mum would drag me around Tammy Girl to get things for my sister, I would be like, I'd buy that and I would wear that. I wouldn't wear that.
So you had this alternate personality, the true personality that had her own taste system, value
fully,
system, everything,
yeah,
a fully formed person that was just in your head.
Yeah, and beauty role models in that as
wow,
well. So Tiffany Amber Thiessen from Saved by the Bell, obviously, I mean, Kelly Kapowski, come on.
Yeah.
Eventually Victoria Beckham or Victoria Adams, particularly, and obviously it was the 80s, so Brooke Shields.
Yeah.
And obviously seeing those images of Brooke Shields as a child and just being like, who is this sort of goddess woman? Because she was everywhere.
The first time I met you, you were Juno.
Yes.
But it was quite a number of years ago. You look quite different. Just you were at the start of a kind of physical manifestation of Juno.
Yeah.
And we were at the Glamour Awards and you were wearing full makeup. And I remember you like really delightedly talking about having your makeup done by a MAC artist, I think it was. And I loved it because it felt like a whole world, a world I love, was suddenly opening up to you. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I mean, I so vividly remember that because it was just wrong. My makeup was wrong. Because I think the first time we met at Glamour Awards, I'd done my own makeup. And then the next year, you'd fixed me up with somebody from MAC. And you did literally, in the middle of that marquee, you sorted me out and very much turned me on to blusher because I was very unlucky in some ways to come of age during peak contour. And so I've basically started by grinding Nescafe into the contour of my cheeks, which is what it looked like, just these brown lines, looking like I was on my way to audition for Cats or something. Because I think it was just, it's that thing of, there isn't a school for this.
No.
You are not taught. And I think whether you are trans or not, somewhere down the line, you've had to learn, and that probably involves an element of trial and error and getting it wrong. And when I look back at those pictures from 2014, I wasn't entirely, I think I'd been given some bad guidance, I think possibly, and a lot of it was around this is what's fashionable, not this is what suits you.
Yes.
And I think that's something you have to learn by experimentation and trying things out and seeing what suits you. I knew, again, right from the beginning, knowing pretty, pretty pinks and florals weren't my taste. And I think, I learned that watching my mum. And so it was always about the Shirley Mansons and Gwen Stefani's and Kate Moss's and trying to emulate that kind of quite deconstructed devil may care approach.
I think that's a really interesting point. And I want to know more about that because I don't know if I'm right or wrong or misunderstanding, but I have always wondered if you know in your heart of hearts that you're a woman and the world can only perceive you as a man, and when you get a chance to present as a woman finally, is there a temptation to just do really feminine, this is what women look like, rather than going, actually, maybe I'm a bit of an androgynous girl. Maybe I'm a rock girl. Maybe I'm a bit gothy. Maybe I'm a bit grungy.
I think it just varies wildly from person to person. I think there is an element of kid and candy shop. There is makeup I probably bought in 2014 that I've used once, like really bonkers glittery eye palettes and things like that I haven't really come back to. Weirdly for me, I think it affected me more with clothes than with makeup. I think I definitely had a really distinct idea of what I wanted my makeup to look like. What took a bit more learning was clothes, both in terms of fit and in terms of, and again, when 2014-15, we were like peak millennial pink as well.
Yeah.
Doesn't do a thing for
me. No, I can't see
you in
that.
Makes me look ill. So, and half my wardrobe I bought because I was very drawn to that kind of lovely blushy pink colour. Horrible. Made me look sick. So you have to learn somewhere, I guess.
We live in a time where we're sort of reminded constantly to check our privilege in order to see those with less access and opportunity. I know you've done a lot on this in terms of beauty and the privilege of money and fame in looking how you want to look as a trans woman. Can we just talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, and I'm really happy to talk about that because now I did get surgeons to smash the shit out of my face and I don't think we can really hide that. And was the point I did Transformation Street on ITV.
Yeah.
So, it's been well documented. I did have that opportunity and not all trans people do. And there is a bit of a chasm, unfortunately, between trans people who can afford access, because none of this was on the NHS, it was all private, and unfortunately people who can't access that, and there is a bit of a divide, and we also know that trans people might struggle to find employment.
Yes.
Because just the horror of, I was very, again, a different kind of privilege, was working in the liberal, lovely arts, where nobody bat an eyelid. In fact, I was welcomed to meetings and creative things. So, I never had to work on a counter in a supermarket as a trans woman, which I think would be really, really challenging. And I don't know if I would have had the confidence or strength to do that. And so it is important to me that I am really honest that, I get these people all down my Instagram saying, oh my God, you're so beautiful, you're so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't come for free.
Yeah.
And it is not a filter.
Much is talked about and debated about what is the female experience for a trans woman. It's obviously different from my experience growing up as an accepted woman. But actually, I think where they definitely intersect is it's much easier to be a thin and pretty trans woman.
Oh my God,
than
yes.
Not.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember starting, you know, when I started coming out to people in like 2013, one of the things that I used to say quite a lot of, oh, it'll be fine. I'm like only 5'7", you know, and that's crazy because even if I'd have been 6'7", I couldn't have gone on living the way I was, living this weird half life kind of. I would have still had to go about it. But without a doubt, I've been given opportunities as a trans woman working in the media because of how I look. But that is also true of any woman working in the media.
100%.
And I think a lot of times, well, people don't realise how old I am, because if they did, I'd probably be dead. So it's kind of just if you want to believe I'm 28, believe I'm 28. Kind of, but so it's mad. And I'm encouraged when I see people like Rebecca Rue, who quite quietly, the actress, she's just getting on with it, you know, and she keeps being cast. She's in that new Last Christmas film, the big Emma Thompson film, you know, very quietly. She's in the last Jake Gyllenhaal film.
Yeah.
She's not making a song and dance about it. But in terms of trans actors, she's in her 40s, you know, and she isn't going to be cast as squeaky clean teenage ingenue kind of. She's out there just slaying it.
Where are you at with beauty now and your relationship with your face and your appearance?
It's weird, isn't it? Because I think either it maybe comes with age or experience, but you do slightly just find peace with it. And I think because I, broadly speaking, had two rounds of facial feminization. So I had the lot that people saw on Transformation Street. And then when all the swelling, it all healed up, it became really clear that now my nose looked like crap. You know, it did need fixing. And because I'd had a nose job when I was 19, my sister had broken my nose. That's another story. And so once the rest of my face looked
you
all...
You had a renovated house and a dodgy front door.
Exactly. And then I sort of came away from that and I was like, yes, this is what sort of contentment feels like. It's more now, much less now about makeup and much more about skin.
Interesting.
And wanting to, oh, it's so strange because, you know, for so long I felt like I was relying on makeup to signal to the world that I was a woman, whereas now my new goal is to get away without wearing a scrap of makeup.
That's so interesting because makeup's such an armour, isn't it? It's such a coat of armour. And it's an instant way to feminise in that most men don't wear makeup. And so if you really need to show the world that you are female, makeup is a great way to do it because people see a face full of makeup and they assume that what they're seeing is a woman.
Yeah.
It's a great disguiser. It's a great suit of armour. But skin, as you now know, skin is the basis of beauty.
I feel now, for the last 3 years, the world has just accepted me literally at face value, that it's been a very long time since anyone's misgendered me, since anyone's got it wrong. And yeah, I want to be able to potter around Brighton without a face full of makeup. But completely acknowledge that in 2013, you know, that makeup really was the only message I had to the world, which is, please understand what I'm going for. And what I'm going for is woman. And I know you might read me still as a boy, but if you could try to treat me like a woman, or at least call me miss or madam, I would really greatly appreciate that.
I so understand what you mean. And for every trans woman who is 6'7" and built like a brick, there'll be a trans man who looks like me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's tough, isn't it, if you don't have a helpful starting point physically.
It's a privilege. And, you know, within the community, it's referred to as passing privilege because you just get less abuse on the street. And that's nice. It's nice when people aren't staring at you or pointing, you know, and everybody thinks they're really subtle. Everyone thinks that you can't see them nudging your boyfriend.
Sure.
Look over there.
Yeah.
And it's like, hello, I'm trans, not deaf. It's no fun. And the fact that that sort of chapter of my life finished is good, although it opened the door to a fun new chapter that I like to call misogynist sexual street harassment, which, you know...
And which is not fun.
It's not fun, and I don't care. And it really boils my piss when I hear other trans women say,
so
oh, it's really validating for me as a trans woman when builders... And I'm like, no, absolutely not. We don't want to live in a world where men feel they can pass comment on women's appearance in the street, even
Thank
in
you.
A positive way.
I feel the
it's
same.
It's gross.
So where are we at now with beauty? What would you say to a woman transitioning and wanting to look more female? Is makeup play to you? Is it a necessary tool? I worry sometimes that people forget about the joy of it.
Mm.
The joy of actually spending time looking at yourself in the mirror and adorning it. Are you able only now to enjoy that, or were you always able to?
I did. I've always seen makeup as slightly like a little crafty hobby.
Yeah.
Like I remember that. When right at the beginning in like 2013, going and buying what I felt was like a starter kit. And I got one of my good friends, Kerry, hello, Kerry, to do a shop to Boots with me because I didn't feel quite brave enough to go to Boots by myself. And she was like, this is what you need for a starter pack.
Nice.
So these are like the 10 things you need. And then going back and kind of starting to learn the craft, as it were. And then in terms of advice too, any other woman, I think makeup is what you want it to be. Now, obviously, you can get really technical, and that's, I must admit, I've never mastered contouring,
mm-hmm.
and that literally changing the shape of your features using shadowing,
mm-hmm.
just can't do it. I just look like I'm in Lion King.
Do you know what, though, Juno? Life is finite. Like, how important is it, really? The thought of getting up 3/4 of an hour early to kind of chisel and my face into facets like an emerald, it doesn't fill me with joy.
But if you were trans,
yes.
and had quite a strong
sure.
jaw,
sure.
then actually contouring can be a godsend. And actually, it is what a brilliant way to draw attention to yourself.
Yeah.
And I think I was guilty of that in the early days as well, in that I was trying to keep my head down but was wearing Gwen Stefani levels of makeup, which of course just drew attention to me because I looked probably like a drag queen. So it's, again, it's a catch-22, which is you feel, and I personally, I'm just speaking for myself, I personally felt like I needed that makeup
mm-hmm.
to get by, but at the same time, it was probably drawing attention to me. So it is, I think it is, it's just about getting started. And I think for me, makeup did bring peace of mind. And I think it signalled to the world my intention.
I love that. You saying, I used to think I needed it and now I know I want it. It's just lovely.
Yeah, and it's, I know some women really hate makeup and just cannot be arsed. That's fine. Some days I can't be arsed as well. But I still think there is, you know, I run a cabaret night in Brighton. So those are the nights when I am performing.
Well, it's brilliant to have you in the studio and you're going to stay for some questions. Can't let you leave without answering some of those, or at least let's have a go.
The Beauty Podcast with Sally Hughes is brought to you by Avon, where as well as buying from a rep, you can now shop Avon online for the same great beauty products. Try their best-selling cream to powder foundation, now available in a new matte finish. Browse online through thousands of fantastic ranges from makeup to skincare, perfume to body care, simply by visiting the online store. So to discover your new favourite beauty product, shop with your rep or just search for Avon online. Now back to Sally, answering your questions in the clinic.
I've asked for questions on the power of transformation. Let's see what we've got. Lauren asks, what are your 3 favourite products for getting ready and feeling done?
It used to be very, very full coverage foundation. I used the MAC Studio Fix powder.
Uh-huh.
And it was like a mask because I was still undergoing the laser hair removal, which is a bugger. It takes years and years. And it's such a nightmare because it only zaps out the dark coloured hairs as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I still have like 3 ginger hairs on my chin that there isn't a laser in the world that is going to get rid of them. It's just like, I'll just grow it and plait it.
So a full coverage foundation.
Full coverage foundation. Always, always a very thick Claudia Winkleman eyeliner.
I mean, great.
To this
that's
day.
That's never not wrong.
Yeah, that's still good. And initially, in the early days, there was a Smashbox contour kit as well.
I know exactly
that
what
I was
you,
that I used to sort of a bring my nose in before my nose job and to sort of soften my jaw as well. Now, I've switched over to the MAC Studio Fix liquid foundation, which is much sort of lighter and just a little blob. Concealer now, always under the eyes. And I think it's, again, it's a bit of a wonder project, and I think it's one of those kind of famous ones. It's the Charlotte Tilbury Pillow Talk Blusher, which I love. I think, I don't know how it knows where to sit on your cheeks, but it does.
I find it a bit spangly for me.
I wouldn't leave the house without mascara. If the house was on fire, I would put mascara on before I left.
Just for the paramedics. Just,
yeah, you never know.
Sam wants to know, would you recommend clear lip liner to use as a base and liner? If so, any recommendations for one that isn't too drying? I want to start wearing brighter, bolder lipsticks, so figured I needed a liner to stop bleeding and feathering. I have thoughts on this. Can I share my thoughts?
Please do, because I've never used a clear lip liner ever.
So quite a few brands make clear liner. They're relatively easily available. They're never big sellers because I think people don't know what they're for, so I should explain what they are for, is that they go with any lipstick because they're clear.
Ah.
They have no colour. And you draw an invisible line around your lips, theoretically, and the lipstick doesn't then bleed past the dam of the lip liner. I like a coloured lip liner because I like to do corrective surgery with my lip liner. One half of my lips are lower than the other, so I make them higher with a coloured pencil, which you can't do with the clear.
Because I had a mole removed when I was a teenager because it was gross. And so I have to do the same. The surgery to remove the mole pulled one side of my mouth down a bit.
So you're drawing a fake line.
Yeah, the filler guy does claim he can correct that, but it's still, this side is always slightly thinner.
Who does your filler?
A wonderful man called Dr. Firhas Tukmaki from Dermadoc in London.
Tish wants to know, best concealer to use under the eyes that doesn't go cakey and the best way to prep concealer. And piling on concealer will not cover dark circles. You need a little slick of corrector under your concealer to cancel out grey, blue, brown tones.
Can I recommend an absolutely essential product for trans women?
Yes.
Because you've got the discoloration where you've got dark hair growing on your face, if you do, you have to correct it in the same way that you would a dark circle. So initially there wasn't, I couldn't find a product that had been made for purpose. So I used like a pinky blusher and then did the concealer under the foundation. But now I wouldn't have had to do that because a very clever lady called Jessica Blacker has a cosmetics line called Jekka.
Yes, I've seen Jekka.
And they do a correct and conceal palette, which is a godsend. I don't really need it anymore after many years of laser.
The beginning of one's journey.
But oh my gosh, that one product would have changed my life. So you just go on, there's a pinky one, then, and they do it in three shades, I think, pinky layer, concealer layer, then foundation.
Exactly.
Job
so
done.
You're knocking out that discoloration.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned facial hair then. We've had lots of questions about facial hair. What was your way of tackling it and how important was it?
I just had, I think they call it cryo laser or something. It's just, and it takes a number of sessions. It's not cheap, but it's not wildly expensive. I think it was about £40 a session.
No bounce back? It didn't come back?
It took, so I think, about good 3 years of monthly sessions. So not cheap. But we were talking, you know, very coarse, thick hair. So I would have thought, because so actually, and then, so what I also did was I had my little, that little bit of tummy hair did, and that took about three
the
sessions.
Jacob's ladder.
Yeah, it took three sessions and it was gone. So
we've got some lovely questions that have just come in, actually. So Kim wants to know, she says, I'm a therapist working with young trans women. I'm also a massive fan of Juno's books.
Oh.
And I'd really like to ask Juno her thoughts on how to square an interest in beauty and femininity with not getting too hung up on comparing our appearance with other women, feeling less than or unpretty compared to other images of women on social media, etc. It's something my young trans clients really wrangle with, and I'd love to hear her thoughts.
It's something that women wrangle with.
Yeah.
And for me, and I had to learn through doing, it was when I was writing my last book, Meat Market, and I realised I'd gone mad because all I was following on Instagram, because my book, last book, was about a fashion model. So as part of the research, I followed dozens and dozens of young catwalk models. And without even realising what I was doing, I had curated an Instagram feed that was almost 100% painfully thin 17-year-old girls who are 6 foot. And it does start to mess with your perception of what it is a human should look like. And so I would say this to anyone listening, look at who you are following on social media. Are you following a broad and balanced diet of women from across all walks of life, of all ages? And I think if I were a young trans person now, it would be so tempting to just follow those young trans women who are doing phenomenally well in the media. So Hunter Schafer from Euphoria, Harry Neff from off of the Gucci campaign, India Moore from Pose. These people are all fashion models.
Yeah.
Who are your role models? Is it just really skinny trans women who are 17 years old? Because if I only followed Kim Petras, I'd feel like crap as well. Love Kim Petras, but we need to follow lots of people.
Which one product would you say is the most transformational? That's what Molly would like to know.
I think the power of a haircut should never, ever be underestimated. And I will never, ever, ever forget. So my lovely friend Adam Bennett attached my hair extensions in 2014, and he did it out of the W Hotel at Leicester Square. And I got in the lift and was misgendered by the bellboy, came back down, and he was, "Good afternoon, miss." So literally having 12 inches of hair glued to my scalp changed my life.
So Roberta wants to know, please recommend your best Pillar Box Red High Street Matte Liquid Lipstick. That's quite specific. I like a specific question.
Liquid lipstick.
Pillar Box Red.
I've only used one, and I've never bought one. And I'm going to say why. So it was last year's Attitude Awards. Mm-hmm. And the reference I took to the makeup artist at MAC was, I want to look like one of the girls in the Robert Palmer Addicted to Love video.
Yes.
And she was like, well, a matte lipstick's not going to work. You do need a very glossy.
It's a super high gloss.
Yeah. And it did bleed, even with a liner. So I'm straight back to my Russian Red, which is my go-to.
So MAC Russian Red, as worn by Madonna in Who's That Girl?
Amazing. Kat Von D does a great red called, I want to say Outlaw, I think it's called. That's a great one as well.
On the high street, I just think the quality is so good these days. I can't profess to be a big fan of liquid lipsticks. I feel like that moment has passed a little bit, that very kind of high pigment liquid lip. But Pillar Box Red, it's so interesting. It means something so different, I've discovered, to lots of different people. Lots of people think Pillar Box Red is an orangey red. Lots of them think it's a blue red. Lots of them think it's a neutral red. So generally, when they say Pillar Box Red, they mean Marilyn Monroe red, which is an orangey red, mm-hmm. whereas Pillar Box is more of a neutral to blue red. And so I think with red, the important thing is not putting a name on it before you've actually put it on your face, because the red that looks great on you and a true red for you is completely different from what a true red is to me. We've got some more product-y questions.
Excellent.
The British summer is cold one minute and then sweltering the next. What's your best advice and products for avoiding sweaty skin and worn-off makeup? That's Jen.
Well, for me, the revelation product this year was that Charlotte Tilbury Miracle Glow, because when it's a really hot day, the last thing you want to feel is like you've got a mask of foundation on. And I've had my first post-transition holidays this year to Thailand and Cyprus. And I'm still not sure what I think about eyelash extensions, I'm going to be honest. But I did think, right, well, I'm not going to want to wear mascara. So I'll have, for both holidays, I had eyelash extensions, blob of this Charlotte Tilbury stuff, and a bit of, obviously, well, it contains SPF, so it's all good.
Can you recommend, Sandia says, can you recommend any good natural-looking lipsticks for people with dark skin? Not nude or brown, but a natural-looking rose. My lips are pigmented, so sheers don't look great. So far, my only one is Lipstick Queen Natural Sinner. I would say, when you have dark skin and you want a nude or a brown, a natural-looking rose, I'm not crazy about a bluish rose because it looks a bit bruised, I think, on darker skin. Mm. Actually, I'm going to say it looks a bit bruised on paler skin as well, but at least it's more of a kind of bold statement. I'm not keen on it. I like an undertone of sort of beige to a rose. TJ says, Salma Hayek doesn't wash her face in the morning. What's your skincare routine?
Actually, not since I was a teenager, I've not used soap. I know that sounds gross, but when I was a teenager, it seemed to make my spots worse.
Yeah.
So I sort of just got out of the habit. And so now just really, really hot water and a face cloth. leave the shower. And so the first thing that goes on is I use Vichy Aqua Thermalia.
Yes.
I think. It's really, and you got
so
me onto that.
A hyaluronic really acid serum.
So good. And then on top of that, I either use, so in the summer months, I've been using an SPF 30, the simple one, mm-hmm. the heavier moisturiser with SPF 30 because I'm so pale. Or Charlotte Tilbury's Magic Cream, which mm-hmm. is SPF 15. And then straight on with the foundation or with just something or nothing.
Cara wants to know, are face wipes just as good at washing your face to remove the makeup from your face at the end of the day? Lots of faces in that question. Oh. I feel very strongly about this, so I'm going to let you be gentle.
Oh, so I didn't realise particularly there was a different way to take off makeup than a makeup wipe.
Wow.
Yeah, I just thought that was what you did. But then it was recently drawn to my attention that they weren't biodegradable. So I have now switched over to at least a biodegradable brand of makeup wipe.
There are now biodegradable wipes, but where are you putting them when you've used them? That's the question.
Oh, not down the toilet. I just put them in the trash. Should yep. I be recycling them or
they
composting
them? They need to go
them?
In compost.
Oh, okay.
Because if they just go into trash, they'll end up in landfill
anyway.
My unfashionable view is you don't need to spend loads of money on cleanser. I really, really don't think that you need a luxury cleanser. Look, I think for makeup removal, the best thing is a balm. Mm-hmm. And probably the most satisfying and pleasing thing for most women is an emulsifying balm. So a balm that you, when you add a little bit of water to it, it becomes milky and comes clean away rather than you having to kind of massage it away with a flannel, if that makes sense.
Like poke your eye out. put the wipe around your finger and sort of grind it out, which is what I'm doing at the moment when you wear as much black eyeliner as I do as well. So it's probably I'm in danger of blinding myself.
So that's the best thing at night. But then I think in the morning, you don't need a balm. It's a bit like cracking an egg with a sledgehammer. In the morning, you can just take a very light milk. You know, any old one will do. You don't need a super expensive one. And you just, again, massage it in and take it off with the hot flannel. And you can use one flannel per day for both cleanses. Start in the morning so that it's not filthy because it'll be at its dirtiest at night.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Juno Dawson, for joining me. Where are you on social media, please?
I am at Juno Dawson on everything.
Huge thanks for coming along and huge thanks to all of you for asking all your beauty questions. Please ask me any more that you so wish, including your episode requests or any seemingly impossible beauty gripes, by tagging me on social media and using the hashtag #TheBeautyPodcastWithSally, and I'll come find you. Until then, you've been listening to me, Sally Hughes, and this podcast was brought to you by Avon.